He thought about alone in Constantinople that time, having quarreled in Paris before he'd gone out. He'd whored the whole time, and then when that was over and he'd failed to kill his loneliness but only made it worse, he'd written her, the first one, the one who left him, a letter telling her how he'd never been able to kill it. And when he thought he saw her outside the Régence one time, it made him go all faint and sick inside, and that he would follow a woman who looked like her in some way along the boulevard, afraid to see it was not she, afraid to lose the feeling it gave him. How everyone he'd slept with had only made him miss her more. How what she had done could never matter, since he knew he could not cure himself of loving her. He wrote this letter at the club, cold sober, and mailed it to New York, asking her to write him at the office in Paris. That seemed safe. And that night, missing her so much, it made him feel hollow sick inside, he wandered up past Taksim's, picked a girl up, and took her out to supper. He'd gone to a place to dance with her afterward. She danced badly, and left her for a hot Armenian slut that swung her belly against him so it almost scalded. He took her away from a British gunner subaltern after a row. The gunner asked him outside, and they fought in the street in the cobbles in the dark. He'd hit him twice, hard, in the side of the jaw, and when he didn't go down, he knew he was in for a fight. The gunner hit him in the body, then beside his eye. He swung with his left again and landed, and the gunner fell on him and grabbed his coat and tore the sleeve off, and he clubbed him twice behind the ear and then smashed him with his right as he pushed him away. When the gunner went down, his head hit first, and he ran with the girl because they heard the MPs coming. They got into a taxi and drove out to Rimli Hisa along the Bosphorus and around and back in the cool night and went to bed. And she felt as overripe as she looked, but smooth, rose-petal, syrupy, smooth-bellied, big-breasted, and needed no pillow under her buttocks. And he left her before she was awake, looking blousy enough in the first daylight, and turned up at the Para Palace with a black eye, carrying his coat because one sleeve was missing. That same night he left for Anatolia, and he remembered later on that trip, riding all day through fields of the poppies that they raised for opium, and how strange it made you feel, finally. And all the distances seemed wrong, to where they had made the attack with the newly arrived Constantine officers that didn't know a goddamn thing, and the artillery had fired into the troops, and the British observer had cried like a child. That was the day he'd first seen dead men wearing white ballet skirts and upturned shoes with pom-poms on them. The Turks had come steadily and lumpily, and he had seen the skirted men running and the officers shooting into them and running then themselves, and he and the British observer had run too until his lungs ached and his mouth was full of the taste of pennies, and they stopped behind some rocks and there were the Turks coming as lumpily as ever. Later he'd seen the things that he could never think of, and later still he'd seen much worse. So when he got back to Paris that time, he couldn't talk about it or stand to have it mentioned. And there in the café, as he passed, was that American poet with a pile of saucers in front of him and a stupid look in his potato face, talking about the Dada movement with a Romanian who said his name was Tristan Tzara, who always wore a monocle and had a headache. And back at the apartment with his wife, that now he loved again, the quarrel all over, the madness all over, glad to be home, the office sent his mail up to the flat. So then the letter in answer to the one he'd written came in a platter one morning, and when he saw the handwriting, he went cold all over and tried to slip the letter underneath another. But his wife said, "Who's that letter from, dear?" And that was the end of the beginning of that. He remembered the good times with them all, and the quarrels. They always picked the finest places to have the quarrels. And why had they always quarreled when he was feeling best? He'd never written any of that, because at first he never wanted to hurt anyone, and then it seemed as though there was enough to write without it. But he'd always thought that he would write it finally. There was so much to write. He'd seen the world change, not just the events, although he'd seen many of them and had watched the people, but he had seen the subtler change, and he could remember how the people were at different times. He'd been in it, and he'd watched it, and it was his duty to write of it. But now he never would.